Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie.
Hey, Dark Hearts.
Welcome back.
Long time. It's been a nice little
fall. Yeah, little fall break-ish. And yeah, it's funny because it feels like it's been ages.
So I worked Saturday because obviously we just said I had stuff going on to take a break. My husband and I went on like a 12-day vacation at the end of October. So the day our last two episodes came out, we were flying to Florida. And that was forever ago. And so I was gone the first Saturday of the month, which I usually work, right? So I worked the second. And one of my clients came in and he listens to our stuff. And he was like, they totally framed that guy. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, your last episode. I was like, I don't even remember what that is. A whole lifetime
has happened. I literally can't remember what that was.
It was the one I did with the guy who got beat to death at the bar.
North
and they
Dakota.
Like tried to frame, like they totally tried. I had to go read the description. I was like, as soon as I saw the title and
that's
the little
funny.
I was like, that's right. I was like, I don't think you understand how much has happened in my life since was recorded.
Yeah. And life has changed pretty drastically since then.
So much has gone on.
Yeah.
Like
that was so long ago.
We visited family. We went on a concert cruise ship, which was great until the last final day, and someone went overboard. That was unfortunately
that was on the news. Found. Turns out, my mom said she saw it on the news.
Did
so.
She?
Yeah, I told her about that. Yep, she's like, I thought I saw something about it. She said it wasn't huge, but like it was just mentioned.
Yeah,
so
that Monday after I was back, which also FYI, I'm gonna make sure I always take the Monday after I get back from a vacation off.
That's fair.
I got a text from a friend because people had posted something like, "Was this you?" And I was like, "Was this your cruise?" And I was like, "Yeah, it was."
Marked safe from falling off cruise
a
ship.
Boat.
Blah blah.
Yeah.
That's dramatic though. That's like always my fear. My fear is getting lost in a big body of water, as you know,
drowning. It's fair.
So,
the ocean is terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little upset. I was outside at times trying to see if I could find anything, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing. But supposedly someone saw a UFO on the ship and I was like, motherfucker.
No, they didn't. I'll just tell you right now. No, they didn't.
They might have.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So then we got back and then for those of you who, I don't know, the YMCA and that tuberculosis outbreak, my kids were exposed, which luckily it came back. They are negative.
That was
but
so
it was
stupid.
Just a lot too.
It was. Like, I had some other friends that had to do that too. And I was
to
just
come
like,
back and like,
what a joke. I got laid off while Cassie was gone. Yeah. So that was, you know, it's a whole new world here.
We're already halfway through November.
I know. It's crazy.
What is today? Today's the 14th, right?
Yeah. 14th, yeah.
Like, Thanksgiving is next week.
I know. It's insane. The amount of things that have, like, just how fast time goes, I think, in general. I feel like it's almost the new year already. And I just got used to, like, saying 2023, writing, but I don't really write that ever since I'm not in school
or I don't
write checks. But, you know.
Parental consent forms I still have to, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, so life has just, it's been a lot.
Yeah.
Vacation was nice. 12 days was a little too long. Don't spend 6 days in Boca, y'all. That's too long.
The older I get, the less, I mean, I love a vacation, but time-wise, I just am always ready to get home to my own bed, to my dogs.
Speaking of dogs.
Being an introvert.
Wick, we got home on a Saturday. It was like 12:40 a.m. So technically Sunday, I guess. This mama's boy. I'm like, okay, he's going to have missed me for sure. So he barks when we come in, which I'm like, hey, it's almost 1 a.m. Good for you. No, that jackass for a half hour growled and barked at me and would not let me near him.
He was pissed at you.
He went up to my husband. He was going over by my sister. He does this paw, like we say paw, and he puts his paw in your hand. And if he knows that he's done something wrong, he'll try to do it to look cute. So like towards the tail end of it, he like kind of got close to me and put his paw out. And I stuck my hand out and he put his paw in my hand. But then he was still kind of lowly growling at me. I'm like, listen here.
He's pissed.
Has he been even more clingy the last two? Yes. Yes, he has. But apparently he had to be dramatic as fuck first.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly. Yeah. That sounds about right. These dogs.
Yeah.
They know what's up.
Yeah.
They for sure know.
My husband thought it was hilarious. I'll bleep that a bit out.
Yeah. It's,
he thought it was hilarious. I was like, it's not. That's not funny.
It's not. No, that's hurtful. Wick, don't do it again.
Yeah.
He also says, then don't leave me for that long, Mom.
It's like he was home, you know? It's not like he was boarded.
Yeah, that's true. That makes it way worse. My dog, if I even get like a suitcase out to move anything, she starts whimpering and crying. And I'm like, calm down. Because she just, she knows that we're leaving. And I'm like, okay. So that sucks.
Yeah. So that's where we're at, kind of, sort of, you guys. That's a very skinny rundown.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So...
So, Shannon, it's you.
Yeah, like spooky season is done. Never done in my heart, but it's like,
I was gonna say spooky season is year round.
I just feel like it went so fast too this year. I mean, I don't know. It was hard to enjoy and soak in all the fun things just because it was so busy. But
I was gonna say, end of September, October were so busy for me that it just flew by.
I know. And I love Christmas, but I'm not ready for that yet. Especially now that I'm laid off, because I'm like, wow, that was a great time that they laid off people when it's right around the holidays. So,
yeah,
you know, that's fun. It's just great. So let me pull this baby up here. I had my stuff ready to go. Okay. So we're in Iowa this week. I can't remember if I switched around states, told you.
I think you did. Yeah.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. So we're in good old Iowa. So we're in Earlville, Iowa, to be specific, which is Delaware County also. If
I don't know why that just made me think of Earl Had to Die by the Chicks.
I know. That's fair. I feel like, didn't we have someone named Earl recently too? Didn't I have...
I feel like this came up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I had a case with his name as well. Okay.
Yep.
So that's it. That's all I'll really mention about the fact that it's the town is Earlville. I just had to say it one more time because, clearly it's a very small community, small town, farm town, all the things that we like to mention on these, because that's usually how it goes when we're in the Midwest, you know?
Right.
So, And we're going to talk about Amy and Todd Mullis. So they lived on a hog farm, which clearly was like, you know, a full-time job. Apparently really good money in hog farming. It's just funny when they keep referring to it as hog. I just want to think like little piggy. Like, I don't want to say hog. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, bringing home the bacon quite literally.
Literally.
In this case, yes. So
also, it's a good way to dispose of bodies.
Yeah, it is. It could have been in this situation, but turns out it really wasn't. You'll see. So Todd did that full time, but Amy actually, she worked as an RN in the ER at the local hospital. So Amy was super bubbly, outgoing. She loved all the outdoorsy things, farming, hunting, fishing, camping, gardening. She was also a hardcore Iowa Hawkeyes fan. I think that's gross because I can say that because we're from Nebraska. And
listen, I don't care about either one of them, but I do know that they play each other that Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And it's just like, I just like to give anyone crap. I don't know. I hate the Hawkeyes because it's always, I felt like I was born to, you know, hate them because of it's Husker football.
And I'm just so contrary that I hate the Huskers because everyone loves them so much in the state of Nebraska. I'm like, screw the Huskers.
That's fair. That is fair. So,
I also don't care about any football teams. Yeah.
I mean, so I like college football, but I used to watch it more before I had a child. And now it's just like, I don't have the time for that anyway. But we will go ahead and still like Amy, I guess, because of that. She liked designing and making t-shirts and stuff. You know, one of those cricket people, really wish I had that skill or money to have that skill because you can
make some really expensive.
Stuff. I know. For sure. So Todd just kind of described as a very straight shooter, farmer guy. I mean, you know, tough, hardworking. They had three kids. So they had Tristan, Taylor, and Wyatt. After they had
the T's.
I know. They went off that at the end there. Wyatt. Amy decided to stay home with the kids after they had their third one. And she just helped kind of partner in their farming operation. So that's a little background on them. So on November 10th of 2018, So let's see, Amy, I didn't put this in her, but I believe Amy was 39 and I think Todd was 42 at the time of this. A 911 call comes in. It's Todd. He's very frantic. He's yelling. He said he found his wife face down by one of their sheds on their farm with a corn rake sticking out of her. You know, the 911 caller is like, well, what happened? You know, he says, I don't know. She fell. It looks like she fell on the goddamn fork. And he said, you know, they're like, well, where are you? And he said, I'm on my way to the ER with her right now. You can tell he's frantic. He's like yelling. He said he had to pull the damn fork out of her back, basically, to bring her. And they're like, okay.
She tripped. She was face down, but it was in her back. But he said she fell on it.
She was like in a, I don't know, kind of, yeah, face downward, faced over, but it was on her. So he made it sound like it. She had fallen on it, got up, tried to come walk and kind of fell over. Like, if that makes sense, the way she was kind of hunched over.
Still, what are the chances of falling backwards onto?
I know.
Like that already.
Plus, I just don't even like, yeah, it just sounds painful to begin with too. I'm like, yeah. Okay. So this corn rake that he describes. So basically it's a farm tool. There's four very long, sharp prongs. It's not like your average rake, you know?
Yeah.
I'll post a picture obviously of it.
I was going to say, I almost picture like a hay, you know, like the hay rake things, but maybe like curved.
It's more like,
I picture it curved.
I don't know. It's kind of, do like I'm showing a picture. Nobody can see.
I know.
I'm basically doing a number four. So,
but yeah, but like they have those hay rakes that it's like the number four, but like, yeah, they're like,
these ones are pretty straight. It looks like a pitchfork basically, I guess, okay, if that helps.
With
kind
four
of
prongs.
Yeah. Very, I mean, heavy duty, sharp, whatnot. So Todd's on the way to the hospital. They're like, okay, why didn't you just call 911? But I think he was like, I just tried, thought I could get there quicker. Like, I'm on my way right now. He said that she was like in the car. He basically put her on their son, Tristan, their son, he was 13. He was, had been helping out there. So he said, you know, let's grab her. They threw her in the truck. He's on his lap.
Jesus.
Bleeding out basically. Right. Okay.
Also, so, if it's straight and it's not curved, how does she fall into it?
What do you mean? Oh, well, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know, Cassie. Just listen to it.
Okay,
the story,
I'm sorry.
We'll just,
I'm sorry.
It'll
I'm
make more
on
sense.
Okay,
no,
I'll
I know.
Google a picture so I can see it.
Yeah,
now, but, okay.
Yeah.
Corn sorry, rig. I keep interrupting because I have rig. So many questions.
No, you're good. So as he's on the phone with 911, the dispatcher asks if he can pull over and if he's comfortable to perform like CPR while they're on their way. He said he would do anything to, you know, help. So he pulls over. He stays on the phone. He said he you know, lays her flat. He's pumping her chest and you can hear all of this happening on the 911 call. And the dispatcher is giving him instructions, you know, like, you know, as he's doing it, 1, 2, 3, breathe one, you know? And so you can hear this all happening. You can hear him breathing. You can hear him trying to do this. Eventually the ambulance meets them at this point that they're at and they take her to the ER, but she never regains consciousness and she is pronounced deceased. So this shocks the town. Of course, because tiny town, and that's a pretty traumatic thing. So yeah. Todd says, you know, he doesn't know what happened. He just assumed that she had fallen on this rake. So farming accidents are definitely common too.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially like they showed a little clip on one of the documentaries I watched about, you know, things that happen. And obviously, like, you know, there's tractor things that happen. You can fall in the grain bin, suffocate, yeah, all the things. So like they're well aware that accidents happen and they all, you know, I mean, do their best to follow safety procedures where it goes with that. But like, that's just a dangerous field to work in anyway.
It is. There's a lot of things. And yeah, looking at the corn rake. So like there is like a curve.
Like a slight. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like a normal, like, yeah, not like a, yeah, like the rake where it's just straight.
Yeah, straight.
But like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, yeah, I guess I don't know in
so,
your
like,
mind
if
what you
fell
meant by
backwards,
curve and what,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you could fall on it where it would puncture you.
Puncture you.
Yeah.
I still think that's
It's weird. So, you know, the hospital after, well, and also keep in mind the people at the hospital know her because she used to work as a nurse, and it's a small town, so they know her, and they, you know, after she's declared, you know, deceased, they, of course, are like, okay, this doesn't necessarily add up to being accidental. Partially because you don't fall on a rake that has four prongs, but you don't have six puncture wounds.
So, oh, snap.
Yeah. So immediately they're like, this is really hard to believe by accident. She would have had to have fallen on it once, got up, got out of it, fallen again.
Yeah.
So of course they're going to, you know, initially look at Todd as a person mm-hmm. of interest. So Todd and their son Tristan were about 100 yards away from where Amy was found. So they kind of look into the past.
How do you not yell if you fall on that?
So I'll have to see if I can find a picture of the farm layout because of where they were. They were in this hog, they called it a hog barn, in the back. And like they have a map where it shows where they were working. And like they're in the back of this big thing. You'd have to come all the way up, come outside, go clear around to this back corner. So I mean, it is very likely they wouldn't have heard her scream.
I mean, based on if they have a bunch of hogs and stuff, they're going to be loud.
And they had fans running, heaters running, all these different things. So like, okay, that's fair. So we'll kind of talk about too when they explain when she's found and all that. But initially, they look kind of, you know, into the background because they're like, well, Todd, this is his farm. What's going on? Is everything solid with them? And it looks like they actually were having some marital problems. So there had been rumors kind of swirling around anyway. And it had kind of come out that Amy actually had had a couple of different affairs over the past 5 years of time. So about 5 years prior to her death, she had cheated on Todd. She admitted it to him. They went to counseling, and this is when she actually quit her job at the hospital to work on the farm because, well, that was when their youngest was born too. And she thought, you know, she could be closer to the family. They could work through all this. So that's kind of what Todd said. But then it's interesting because she actually had told some of her family that she didn't really have a choice, that Todd made her quit
her job. I was going to say, because he's like, if you're not working, if you're not leaving the house, then how can you cheat? Like that sounds very much like we're doing this, so you can't have this opportunity again.
Yeah.
Which totally. if that's how you feel, if you can't move past that, then you shouldn't continue.
Yeah, then
the
maybe
marriage.
Just don't. Yeah. So she had told friends that she just kind of felt like a prisoner. And even one of her friends joked about an approved friend list that she could use and see people. Her friend said that she was timed when she left the house and when she came back, and he was just extremely controlling. So in 2018, she confided in her friends and told them that she hadn't been happy for years. And she was sad of not being happy. So when the police, of course, you know, asked Todd about all of this, he said that their relationship was pretty tight and they had good communication. They were together all the time. So it was good.
Because you're making her.
You live there and you work together. Like, you're together 24/7.
She's not allowed to leave the house.
Yeah. Like, he had nothing to really say about any of that. He had just said that they had worked through the affair in the past and moved forward, whatever.
Deciding to control your wife isn't working through it.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, that's not how this goes. So in July of 2018, Todd said that he had noticed kind of a change in Amy's personality. So he checked the phone records and he saw that she had been communicating with a man named Jerry Frazier. And he was the field manager for the farm. So they knew him. I mean, talked with him. Todd had found 128 texts. He couldn't see the context of the text, but he saw that that's how many they had exchanged. So he confronted Jerry about it first. And Jerry was like, dude, there's nothing going on. It's all about like the hog farm financials because Amy helped do all the bookkeeping and stuff. He's like, it's all about that and about, you know, our kids' activities and this and that. And so he doesn't really believe Jerry. So Todd calls Jerry's wife, and his wife is even like, no, I honestly have no concerns. Things are fine between us. They had a couple of kids of their own, you know? No. So finally he feels like, okay, we're good. So it puts his mind to rest, whatever. So he said she wasn't having any other affairs. However, after investigators look into all this, they do confirm that, Jerry and Amy were indeed having an affair, a sexual affair. So there's a motive right there on multiple parts, I guess you could say. So, now they're like, okay, well now we have this Jerry. He's a person of interest because he has his own family. His wife doesn't suspect anything. They have a couple of kids. Like, he doesn't want to ruin his family. They said it seemed more like Jerry was more invested just in the sexual part of it, whereas Amy actually had developed feelings. So when Amy was really just unhappy with Todd, she said that they had really just kind of grown apart. So she wanted to find attention from someone else. And so she knew Jerry because, like we said, you know, they worked together. And so in May of 2018 is kind of when they started having this affair. Jerry said they only met like once a week. Sometimes more. It would just depend. It was tough because they both had families.
They both have families. They're both working on this farm. She's heavily monitored, which is also where it's like, you're unhappy and like, just leave at that point. Like,
I know.
Don't blow up another marriage because you're unhappy. And so obviously the only men you're going to have attention for or like be around are the guys who work on your farm.
Right. Cause you never leave.
You never leave. And it's like, it seems like you're here. And so like, I'm so unhappy. I'm just going to do like these feelings and not really think about like Like, listen, that's on Jerry too. Like he's the one who made a commitment, but like, 100%. Come on. You know
everybody's guilty. Like, and I get it. Like, Todd, you're hurt, you're upset, but also like, yeah, controlling her is not a way to handle it either. No, so like party is kind of guilty here.
Like, I'm a firm believer of like, if you feel like you're going to cheat on me, like either we need to figure out why, like, is there an issue here? Do we need counseling? Are you done with me? And like, let's just be done then.
Yeah. But like if you're already cheat
on me, if I find out you cheat on me, we're done. Like, I don't, because I can't forget that. Like, I'm never going to forget that. Every time you go out, I'm like, where are you? Who are you texting? I know.
And so, clearly that's how Todd felt too, though, because I mean, he was timing her doing all, very mentally abusive, emotionally abusive. So like, maybe just don't.
Like, all around, like, I get that it's not always that easy, but girl, you got alimony. He owns a hog farm. That shit's lucrative.
Yeah.
He'd have to, you know, child support alimony.
Well, yeah, you'll see how that all works out. So, so, Jerry said, you know, they would usually just, like, meet, like, on a back road somewhere out in the country or sometimes a hotel room, but Amy was really like feeling strongly with this relationship. She had even told her friends that like Jerry made her really happy and that she hoped that they would get married eventually. So she kind of was like had plans to divorce Todd. So that was in the works. So after Todd had found these phone records and had confronted Jerry and his wife, Jerry got super nervous and he told Amy they needed to cool things down a little bit there. And because he was like, I don't need this to blow up my family. I think it started as just kind of a fun thing. And now it's getting to be too much. And, you know, in a small town too, like rumors are flying. Right. So, Amy actually told one of her friends, because of the rumors going around, that she was going to tell Todd about the rumors. She said that it would be good because then he wouldn't think much of it and assume, because she came to him about it first, that it was a rumor. She said, I'm just going to tell Todd that there's these stupid rumors and he needs to put an end to it. So, I mean, clearly she was scared too of him finding out. So Jerry had admitted to this affair, you know, of course. However, they look at what he was doing at the time that Amy had fallen on this corner, whatever. And he was actually home, which he lived in Anamosa, which is about 45 minutes away. So his son was a college age boy. I don't know why I said it. His college age boy. He had a son who was college, whatever. And he was home that weekend because this was on a Saturday that this actually this event had happened. So they had worked together all day and then they watched football. So they were able to confirm his alibi, and Jerry's cell phone was pinging in Anamosa during that whole time, which it's so funny because on some of these documentaries, it's like they want to find any excuse that, you know, to like try to pin it on anybody. Cause they're like, yeah, his phone was pinging there, but that doesn't mean he left or he didn't leave and just left his phone. It's like, okay, yes, we are well aware of that as well. Like, but like, you're just trying to find any reason to pin it on anybody.
Yeah.
It's stupid. So since they can confirm that, though, they can kind of rule him out as a suspect. So they look back at Todd. And because, you know, the rumor was that she wanted a divorce, they looked into it and he would have lost half of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like a $2 million deal with the hog farm. So
yeah,
she would have, or he would have lost half the farm, half the assets. He would have paid child support and whatnot. So he can't afford that. He would literally lose his entire life, you know,
right.
livelihood, all the things. So Amy had told her friends too that she stayed with Todd because she was scared of him, because everyone's like, well, why are you even with him if you don't want to be with him? And she said that if he found out that she had an affair, he would kill her. She said, if I come up missing, tell them to look on our farm. Like, she already had an idea of what would happen. So her friend said that Todd was going to kill her, and she knew that her friend was like putting herself in a dangerous situation. And when they talked to the friend, you know, they said, well, what do you mean? Why was it a dangerous situation? She said, because Todd is someone you don't mess with. That's what her friend said. She's like, you just know he's not a guy you'd want to get on his bad side. So after this, they don't have a ton of evidence really, but they do go ahead and charge him with first degree murder, Todd. Okay. So in September of 2019, the trial starts. You know, they're talking about this corn rake and how this is a very up close and personal murder. Like, it's very brutal and pretty much as violent as it comes. It's not like it was a gunshot from far away, which is still terrible, but like,
but this you came up behind her and hit her hard with that rake. Not once, but twice.
Yeah. So they said that she was injured, or they were told that she was injured by falling, you know, into the corn rake. And they said, you know, the defense said it was clearly just a freak accident. So then, of course, the pathologist testifies and says that there, you know, are these six puncture wounds, and four prongs don't make six puncture wounds. Some of them, too, were coming out at an upper angle, and then some were under. So that's how they could determine that it had come out once and gone back in at least twice. So the pathologist said that there also was a small scrape on her lip, and her knees had scrapes, which could, you know, be signs of a struggle. And like I had mentioned, the different directions of the puncture wounds. And they said that she would have had to been struck with this twice or up to three times, depending on the distance between them. Can you imagine? Like, that's horrific. They searched this red shed that she was found, like, right, like the opening of the door, like in between that opening of the door. They looked around everywhere, and there was a couple drops of blood, like, by the door where she was found. But other than that, there was no blood, like, all over the shed, which was interesting as well, because if someone was like stabbing you or stabbing someone, you would see, and taking it in and out, you would see blood spatter at some point somewhere, you would think, or signs of the struggle of her being drug around, trying to run away.
Yeah. Nothing,
which was kind of odd. Like, this case gets kind of weird, and I have different thoughts we can discuss here at the end. So really the only alibi slash witness is Tristan, the 13-year-old son. Because Todd's alibi is that he's been with Tristan the entire time and they've been working together. So, you know, all along too, Tristan said they were together the whole time. So, I mean, there's no way he could have gone and done this. So Tristan testifies at the trial, and I feel terrible for this kid because he's basically testifying against his father, and he's already lost his mom. Like, it's just a horrible situation for any child to have to be put in. And so he's 14 at the time that he testifies, and they had him testify via a closed circuit TV, so he didn't have to be present. Pretty much everything was writing on his testimony. This is the only thing they really have. So Tristan, you know, had initially said, yes, he was with his dad the entire time that they were working. Tristan was super close with his dad. He said they would, you know, they worked together all the time on the farm. That's what you do when you have kids and you live on a farm. They went fishing, they hunted, they were super close. So the day of this incident, the two younger kids were inside the house, and Todd, Amy, and Tristan were all out working. He said that they were setting up portable heaters because there was going to be a delivery of piglets coming to the farm. And when I read that, I was like, oh, initially just like, how cute, a little pig. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, probably not happy for the pig knowing where they're headed. But yeah, so they were getting stuff ready for that because it's November and it was going to be cold. So that's what Tristan was doing. Todd was setting up equipment that gave water to the each of the different pens. And then Amy was cleaning the lights. So they said she would stand up on like a 5-gallon bucket, reach up, wipe the lights. And when she was doing that, she said that she was getting dizzy. So she got down from the bucket and was kind of shaky. Todd said he was worried because she had had an outpatient surgery 4 days earlier. Something, I don't know. They never said what, but something minor. Yeah. But they said it was really her first time kind of doing anything since the surgery. So they asked her if she needed help. And she said no, that she was fine. So she did it again for a while. And then later she said she felt dizzy again. So Todd said that he didn't want her to fall and get hurt. So she should go inside. But he asked her if on the way she could grab like a kennel crate for a litter of kittens that he had to round up. And this crate was in the red shed because he said he didn't want any machinery to fall on these kittens. So if she could just grab that on her way back, whatever, which I was kind of like, don't be an ass. She's already dizzy.
Yeah.
Why would you have her do that? Which this is all what Tristan is, you know, reaccounting. So he, you know, he said, if you can reach it and get it, that's great. If not, no worries. So Amy leaves to go get this. Then she's going to go inside. So after she leaves, Todd and Tristan worked for about another hour and a half. So Todd goes to do whatever, leaves this big building they're in, and he doesn't see that crate out where he needed it. So he asks Tristan to go get it instead. And he said, go to the red shed, go check on your mom, see if the crate's in there. And he said, maybe she's still struggling to get it. Okay, first of all, my thought was, why would you wait an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Unless you truly just lost track of time and you might just go check on your mom. But he was specific and said, go to the red shed.
Yeah.
And so Tristan is the one that found her, first of all, too. That's just horrible. So he goes to check and he finds her on her hands and knees face down. So he saw this corn rake sticking out of her and he said he immediately just panicked and he checked for her pulse on her neck and on her wrist, which I thought, you're kind of a smart kid. I mean, for being 13, like that's impressive. Yeah. So he said that his anxiety just went from 0 to 100 in a second and he screamed for his dad. So Todd comes running and sees this and immediately gets his truck. And he said they had to take the rake out of her back in order to get her into the truck. So Tristan gets in, Todd carries Amy, lays her on top of him, and they're driving to the hospital. And there's just, you know, blood everywhere now at this point. So Tristan said Todd called 911 on his way and he pulls over, which we are aware of all that from the beginning of this. But then the first on the scene was Deputy Luke Thompson. So he said that when he got to the scene, she wasn't breathing and there was no pulse. So he started doing chest compressions. And as he's doing this, he's asking Todd what happened. Todd said he didn't know and that he was just worried because she had been really dizzy and he thought that she had fallen trying to get this pet carrier. Tristan said that his dad and him were together the whole time and they had no idea who was going like or what was going on. So they asked who else had access to the farm.
Every worker.
Yeah, literally. And of course, they've already ruled out like Jerry, which would be the other one that would probably make the next, I mean, most sense, right? So they also thought it was interesting that Todd sent Tristan to look for her. And why did he wait an hour and a half? And why the shed? Why specifically the shed? Why didn't he say, go find mom? Because Tristan, you know, the prosecutor's asking him all this and he's saying, did he say go to the red shed, like specifically? And he said, yes, just go find mom. Go look at the red shed. Also,
how did Todd hear his son yelling, but he couldn't have heard if she yelled? Because if she fell on that and was coming forward, like she wouldn't have yelled out.
Yeah, I know. Well, and I think he was out from what I understand. I think he had come out of the barn that they were in working because that's when he noticed the pet carrier wasn't there.
Yeah. And so he wasn't, his son was going to find his mom.
Right. So that's why they didn't hear when they were in the thing, if that makes sense. So, but it does appear that, he wants Amy to be found by someone other than him. Mm-hmm. And, so then also, like, they show clips of them talking to Todd when they're, you know, interviewing him and stuff. And they finally are just like, we know you did this. You're responsible for her death. And he doesn't, like, argue. And he's just, like, you know, saying, I'm not going to admit to something I didn't do. So he doesn't, like, straight up say, like, no, I didn't. Like, but yeah. He also is like, I didn't do it. And also, it's hard to say, like, oh, he didn't react the right way, because we know everyone reacts differently. Mm-hmm. So, like, I kind of hate when they use that as any sort of defense or on the opposite side, because that doesn't matter.
Sometimes people just shut down and you will seem like you're in emotionless. Shock. You're in shock, and you've got, like, all this. Like, not only have you just lost your wife, your children, your child. Like, let's say he's completely innocent. You've now lost your wife.
Yeah.
Your child, you know, is the one who found her, and how, like, maybe you do feel guilt. Like, if I hadn't sent her in there to look for this.
Oh, totally.
This wouldn't have happened. If I hadn't sent my son, he wouldn't now have these images. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, you could have just shut down emotionally.
Exactly. So, I think that was kind of stupid that they said that, because I was like, well, you don't, that's not a good thing to go off of. I mean, you want to think that people would immediately be like, no, I didn't do it. But then also people are like, oh, when they're so quick to be defensive, they totally did it. So it's like, you can't win. But
no, you can't win. The only time I'd say, like, you can judge the emotional state is when, like, they're ridiculous, over the top. Like, you hear those 911 calls are, like, falling to their knees.
Yeah, and like
you watch crying. Too much drama TV. Mm-hmm. Like,
and, like, to me, the 911 call in this case, like, I mean, I feel like it seemed genuine. I feel like I don't know. The response seemed like he was very panicked. And so I don't know. It's really hard to even know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so Tristan had said all along that him and his dad were together the entire time. But, you know, they said, at some point, did you lose sight of your dad? Could you see your dad this entire hour and a half time? You know, and he said, well, yeah, at one point, I guess I did go get water up at the front of the barn. So he said, I couldn't technically see him from up there, but I was gone for less than a minute each time, you know. But then that's what he had said initially. But then at the trial, he said he didn't know how long he had been away from his dad. So I just feel bad. Tristan's young, you know, he wants to do the right thing. He wants to help. He's also just
been through so much trauma. Like,
he just saw your mom.
Dead, and then his dad gets arrested.
Yeah, you know, and it sucks because, like, he wants to help both of his parents. Yeah, I mean, they're putting him up against his father, and then, you know, they ask him all these things about it, of course, and they asked him if he saw any blood on his dad, and he said no, which you would assume there would probably be some blood. He said his dad's demeanor never changed. And of course, the defense team, you know, says that there would have been no time for him to get from the hog barn all the way to the red shed in that short amount of time and back, just when Tristan was taking a drink, which that's kind of fair.
Yeah.
And in order for something like that to happen, I don't know. So there's really no physical evidence at all on Todd. But it was interesting, too, because they said, you know, there's surveillance on the farm. So they go to pull this tape to see that day if they can see anything. And there's no tape recording from that day, but there's footage from the next day. So they said, did he delete the surveillance? But interestingly, you know, when they asked Todd about that, he said, okay, actually, it was after all of this had happened, his family even asked him, do you have the surveillance? And he said he went to check and he realized that it wasn't on and working because I had somewhere in my notes here. He said that sometimes when there were stray cats on the farm, they would jump up to where these cameras were and it would knock them off because they like to lay on the worm, which is, I mean, anyone who has a cat knows that that's a very true statement too.
That's convenient.
But the only other thing is that if you look at the surveillance, it hadn't recorded for weeks prior. So it wasn't
So it wasn't like yesterday it recorded.
They don't mention that in the trial until later. Gosh, and it's like, if you put all the, he said the reason it was working then the next day was because after his family was like, hey, did you check? And he was like, no. And he goes and checks, sees that it's down, fixes it. So then it starts recording.
Okay.
But it hadn't recorded for a few weeks.
Okay.
Could be a setup to, like, I'm going to knock this off so it looks that way. I have mixed feelings on this the more I kind of read on about it. So, but then there's the other things that come up that are a little hard to argue with, was they had Todd's iPad, which the family shared this iPad. But in the search history, it was what happens to cheaters in history, thrill of the kill, killing unfaithful women. And there was like an anatomy search on where organs are located in the body. So that one's a little bit difficult.
That's some pretty damning circumstantial evidence.
That right there was like, ooh. So then I don't know why, but they put Todd on the stand. And I'm kind of like, dude, that's a never smart idea. It's very rare that this works out for somebody when they testify. So they ask him, like, why did you not call 911 right away? You know, like, because that is weird. Why wouldn't you? And why would you ever take that out? Like, I feel like, isn't it common sense if something's sticking out of you, you probably don't remove it?
Especially as a farmer who probably has so much first aid knowledge.
Yeah, you have to have.
To know.
Yeah.
You're not going to take that because that's potentially keeping the blood from gushing
spilling out.
It's like.
Yeah. So, you know, prosecution's like, you wanted to get her away from the farm. You wanted her to bleed out. But, you know, he says that he didn't do that because he was just in reaction mode at the time. And he wanted to get her to the hospital as fast as he could, which, okay.
Okay, but maybe. I still don't buy because he's had to have been doing this hog farming shit for so long. Like, he would have had
they have to have, like, safety courses and, like.
Or, like, even if he hasn't, there's no way. Because I'm going to guess that. This has been in his family, right? I'm going to guess farming in general has been in his family. So there's no way it hasn't been instilled in him from a young age. Like if someone thing is stabbed into you, leave it there. Tourniquet around it.
Right. Well, and especially like, with that many wounds, six, which.
Yeah.
Four. Okay. Four that turned into six. Like that's so, a like, lot.
Even if you're like, I can get her there faster.
Call 911 first, regardless. You're losing time by even doing that. So that's what he said on that. I already talked about the cameras, what he had to say on that. You know, of course, they ask him about these searches on the iPad, and he says he didn't do any of that. He said it was a family iPad, which I was like, yeah, I doubt your 13-year-old son and then your kids that are younger, because Tristan was the oldest. So, like, younger than 13, they're not doing that. But there was also searches on there for wedding dresses and like Pinterest stuff. So clearly, like, I guess that, yes, it proves that people were using those because they said, yeah. You know, it was kind of funny because they're like, you know, did you search this? Did you search that? He's no, no, no. And then did you look on Pinterest? He's like, I don't even know what that is. And I was like, yeah, he probably has no clue. It kind of made me laugh because I'm like, yeah, no. You don't have a wedding board, Todd? Like,
right.
Okay. That just proves that the family, they could use it and it could have been her, but why would she be looking at that stuff? I mean,
right.
Yeah. So, you know, he just is insistent that he did not kill her. So
I could maybe see her looking up like what happens to women who cheat or something with like a guilty conscience, but
not like thrill to kill
and looking up where organs are.
Yeah. It's weird. It's super weird.
That's getting ready to murder.
Yeah, totally. You know, so the prosecution is saying, you know, the motive was that she was cheating and if she left him, he would lose half of everything. And then of course the defense said they didn't really prove the case. There's really no evidence connecting him, which they're not wrong. I mean, other than
circumstantial evidence, which is fairly damning, and you can still convict on circumstantial evidence.
I just find it very hard to believe that they couldn't find any physical evidence on him either, like with that amount of blood, you would think. I mean, of course, the DNA is going to be on each other regardless because of that.
Then again, with how depending on how quickly he did it and stuff, you might not have had a lot of blood coming out at the time. And
if he ran off that fast,
well, and you figure if he holds it at the end, he stands fairly far away and doesn't bring it up super far. You could potentially get away.
Yeah.
You could potentially get away with not having a ton of blood splatter, even if you did her 2 to 3 times.
The thing of taking it out and putting it back in, that right there would be like when you pulled it out, you would have some sort of blood, you would think.
A little bit, but not necessarily as much, not necessarily enough to leave a bunch of blood splatter because of how it's puncturing and how quickly it's happening.
Yeah.
It could take a moment before
the blood starts pooling.
The blood starts to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's so bizarre. But then this, I don't know. This was like kind of a Hail Mary on prosecution's behalf because on one of the documentaries I watched, they talk about this and the other one they didn't, but I was like, this is interesting enough that I wanted to add. Okay. So I don't know who it was. Apparently it was like the last day of the trial. Someone had come up with this evidence that during the 911 call, when you can hear him breathing and performing CPR, he's breathing very heavily because of, he's in shock. He's panicked. He's doing CPR for God's sake. So they say you hear him calling her a cheating whore and go to hell. So to me, it was weird because I listened to it. I even stopped like looking at the TV when I was watching it and just tried to listen to see if I could hear it, you know? And it's like, you can hear him breathing like that. And then you hear cheating whore. And like, it's almost like someone put it in there. Like, you know what I mean? And then later it sounds like he's like, go to hell. But I'm like, if you... It kind of reminds me of all these like ghost hunter shows where you think you hear someone talking. You're like, is that, am I imagining that? Yeah. Because this was almost clear enough that it was like, there's no way. And they're like, is he dumb enough to be on a call with 911 saying that? Maybe so. I don't
know. And I guess if they went in and like audio enhanced.
Yeah. It's very, I mean, it's likely.
Because if you're like going like, Junior,
you
know, and like, it's like, I mean, maybe you could enhance it and slow it down so that you could hear it, but then I don't know.
I don't know.
But then you get into like, are you manipulating it though?
Like, yeah, see, and that's where I was like, it's hard because you hear regular breathing. And then that part, it could be just because they enhanced it so much. But like, and it's kind of interesting that it didn't get brought in until the very last day, like literally a Hail Mary kind of, because they don't have a lot. But that was interesting. So the, you know, jury goes to deliberate and prosecution thought they'd come back like super fast. And that was not the case. So they deliberate for 2 days and they talked to one of the jury members on this documentary. And she said that they were very split at first because they had a really hard time with no actual witness and no evidence really other than just these random circumstantial things. Really, the iPad is kind of the main thing that they said it boiled down to, but they do find him guilty. So when they, you know, read this, he just shakes his head and you can tell he's just, I mean, in shock. This woman on the jury said that they had gone back through the evidence over and over and they went through all other scenarios and then it always went back to Todd. She said that it didn't really make sense why he didn't call 911 right away and the fact that he removed that corn rig. They said too, when he took the stand, that didn't help because he seemed very cold and he did not come across as, you know, the grieving husband at all. So without any emotion, which that sucks too, because that could just be his personality and that worked against him. But it was the searches too, that they said on the iPad. So because of that, they said they felt that there's the premeditation there. So they find him guilty, first degree murder. Of course he appeals this and he tries to get a new trial while, you know, he's awaiting his sentencing. His defense was that the reason he should get this is his defense team didn't argue that it was an accident, like he said, and they didn't create reasonable doubt. So his whole thing was that when they went to trial, he did not want it to even be like someone else killed her. He said it should have been like, this is a total freak accident. And that's not the way his team went, which like, I get it. If that's what you, they're doing their job. All they really have to do is create the reasonable doubt to make, which honestly they kind of did. And I mean, I'm really torn on this because
I am torn. I don't know. Like, I am very torn on this and
I was pretty sure initially he did it. I really was like, yeah, he did this. But then the more I mean, there's really no one else that could have done this. It could have been a very freak thing, minus the six prongs.
I was going to say, if there weren't for the six prongs, if it was just the one time in her,
yeah,
I could be like, weird, but not unheard of.
Yeah. Yeah.
My issue is that I wonder too if the kid just blacked out a moment of like not recognizing that his dad wasn't there.
And sometimes kids, yeah, don't realize time, you know, like measuring time. Okay. Mm-hmm. To you, they might've thought it was just a quick minute, but it could have been 10 minutes. Like it wouldn't have taken that long.
And, it could have all happened so quickly. And my thing is then like, to wait that hour and a half and then go check,
like giving it enough time.
Also, the fact that your 13-year-old child, even in a state of panic, has the presence of mind to check for a pulse tells me that you guys have instilled first aid on him. And there's no way, again, that you don't know that you shouldn't be pulling that out.
Yeah.
So, like...
And I find that very weird that if he was that concerned with her being dizzy, he would have her still go retrieve this crate for him.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite way of the house. It wasn't like on her way.
Yeah.
So there's
a lot. Why not send your 13-year-old child for that then?
Yeah, exactly. Hey,
we need this crate.
Yeah.
Can you go grab this? Well, I'll keep doing this. Mom, you go home. It's the pulling it out. And the searches for me that
those are the two pieces. A
tough one, but I think ultimately I can see where the jury would be like, yes, because I just don't feel like there's enough reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I know. See, that's where I feel like, they did a good job of creating the reasonable doubt because they really had me questioning it, but there's really no way they could get past the iPad searching in the prongs. And so like they might have been better at going the route of a freak accident, like he actually said.
My only other thought, but I think this would have come to light because I would hope they had looked at financial records of this, is if he hired someone to be waiting there for her.
Right. And then do this.
And leave. So he then has the alibi of his child.
Right. Which even that's not that strong of an alibi because kids can lie. No, and they're young,
kids can
and
so lie. Like, he's young. He's been first of all, as humans in general, our memory is shit. Mm-hmm. Our brain makes shit up to be cohesive. But then you add in trauma.
Sorry, was my watch just talking to us?
It was.
Yeah, sorry.
But then you add in trauma.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to fuck with. Listen. I think I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. When my paternal grandpa passed, I still to this day, I was 10, 25 mm-hmm. plus years later, I have bits of that I still cannot remember because I have suppressed it so badly. And I have no desire to go into therapy and be like, let's get this out. Because I already know it was a hard situation for me. But you have a 13-year-old child who found his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Who, let's be honest, 13... Even the younger kids, depending on how old they are, they're aware of the marital problems their parents are having.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself, as a child of a divorced family, you know these shit, you know? And that is stressful enough as a child. Plus, you got this kid who's already mature enough that he's working on the hog farm at 13. You know that kid is doing more than your typical 13-year-old. He's more mature than your typical 13-year-old, and he has more responsibilities than your typical 13-year-old. This kid has so much going on that... We just can't trust his alibi because
any the poor kid is has like
been through so much that like there could be subconsciously that he wants to think I was never away from my dad for enough time for him to do this. Because what kid wants to think that their father would do that? Well, you don't want to lose both of
your parents too. It's not like you're going to just assume your father did this. You're going to assume that he didn't do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which like... I mean, they don't technically have to prove he didn't do it. They just have to prove that he didn't.
They have to put enough reasonable doubt. They have to be like,
they don't have to prove innocence. They just have to make you think that there's a chance he didn't.
There's a good enough chance. And I guess for me, like, this is a tricky one. But I still think the circumstantial evidence in this case is enough to be like, I don't trust it enough that not with
right.
not well, with how controlling
with
he
the
was,
things like, the friends had to say too that she yeah. had said. Like that would be a very what a coincidence that she said mm-hmm. all these things and then he didn't do it. Like
yeah.
there was enough things that she had said and the fact that he had her stay home after that. Like
how controlling he was.
Yeah. Like already. He probably did do it, but it's kind of crazy that there's not more physical evidence. Like that's crazy. Like if he did do it, I mean, he was smart about it in the sense mostly yeah. had his ass covered. And if he had only done it once or whatever with the rake, I bet you they might've thought it was just a freak yeah. accident.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't want to say that was a smart way because, he obviously didn't get away with it. So,
right.
But it's one of those cases that kind of makes you think like, maybe. It's not one that you're like, it's a slam dunk, you know?
No, for sure. So, it's not a slam dunk. I don't know where I stand.
I
still lean more towards in the camp of he yeah. did it.
Yes.
And that just the sad thing is too, is I'm like, you know, would they have collected? Because it's not like you can even go based on DNA on the thing. Although right. I think that would have been a good idea too, because then we have the whole, if he hired someone to right. do it, and if there's some handprints of someone who doesn't work on the farm,
right.
you know what I mean?
But which I'm guessing they tested for DNA, but like they don't ever talk about that. I'm sure they have a series of like things they have to check yeah. or do. Because like they had the rake and everything, and they had that mm-hmm. at the trial. And so I'm assuming they would have tested for DNA, which... I mean, that alone, too, you think you would have heard had someone else
yeah.
been on it. So, I mean,
that yeah, would have been the defense. There was an yeah, unknown. That would have been enough reasonable doubt.
Yeah, totally. So because of, like, you know, the pandemic, he had to wait quite a while before he was sentenced, which, oh, well. So they let him talk before, or because he was denied a new trial when he tried to do that. So then the judge said before, you know, he would sentence him, he'd let him say something. And he just said he didn't do it. And that in America, you should be able to be presumed innocent until guilty. And he said that this was the other way around, he felt. So he said he was always a very loving husband. And that was the end of that. So they sentence him to life without parole. So he is serving his sentence at Iowa State Penitentiary. But, like, ultimately, it really comes down to, like, the kids, too. So, like,
yeah.
these three kids lost both of their parents. So, he acted selfishly to remove a problem in his life, but didn't think enough about his kids and the other layers of trauma that would impact his choice. That's what the family said at the end
yeah.
of this documentary. The kids live with Amy's family now, and... Amy was described in her obituary as always being there for her family and friends. Above all else, Amy's children were the most important part of her life. So I got that off her obituary. And then there are a couple documentaries, if anyone wants to watch them. I watched on Hulu, Killer Cases. I think you can watch it on something else too. But it was season 1, episode 10, called Murder in the Barnyard. And then okay. There was a 48 hours episode also. I watched that one on Peacock. No, that, or, I don't know. I think it was Peacock or Paramount Plus. Sorry. They all run together. I thought I put that in there, but that was season 34, episode 11, The Corn Rake Murder. So I think the 48 hours episode was better than the other one, but there's a lot, out there on it still, because it is so new that he's still in the process of doing all the appeals,
like his appeals
and all the things.
And stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So the last thing I saw is he's still just trying to get a new trial, saying that he did not have an adequate defense team. So we'll see where that goes. But that one's one of those, like, ew, that's an icky, yeah. icky murder. Nobody,
God.
That's not a way I'd want to die, I tell you that.
Yeah. And also, if you're keeping your wife essentially prisoner, controlling when and how long she can be out for, you're not a loving husband.
Yeah.
Like, listen, you two shouldn't have been together.
Yeah.
At this point.
Like, clearly there was a lot of issues between the both of them. And like, yeah,
around.
She cheated, but that doesn't mean she needed to die. So
no,
like,
no.
But yeah. Oh, in Earlsville.
Yeah.
Iowa. Mm,
that
so
is...
that's a fun one to come back to. So that's what I got for today.
Well, thank you for covering that, telling us about that case.
Yeah, that was
I think I do remember hearing about that because I do remember like the iPad like searches and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
I remember hearing about the corn rake because I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, like that's terrible. Because that wasn't, I mean, 2018, not that
it long wasn't ago. That long
so
ago, yeah.
A lot could still really happen with that depending on what judge decides. So, yeah. Keep updated on the news on that.
Yeah. That was so, interesting.
That's what I got. Yeah.
So, so much. Like, I've read a couple books. I watched the new Marvels movie, which was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I saw that came out. I did not.
Uh-huh. I'm 3 episodes behind on Loki for this season, though. Now.
I don't watch
I finally watched Secret Invasions. I just have so much to watch. I did watch. Have you watched on Netflix, Shannon? It's got Adam Devine in it. Pierce Brosnan. It's called The Outlaws, like with a dash between out and laws. So like instead of in-laws,
it's
The
Outlaws. I did watch that a while back. Oh, I was highly disappointed. Did you like
were
it?
Were you? I thought it was funny. Like
it was I thought it started kind of funny, and I had high hopes because of the cast.
But see, then I went kind in with like no expectations. I just went in expecting it to be a dumb move, like dumb funny movie, and so it entertained me.
Yeah. Like, I think I fell asleep through it. Maybe like I don't know that I actually finished it because I was kind of bored with it. But I had it on. Oh, I think
I thought it was fun.
That's funny. I mean, yeah, it was interesting. That's for sure. But I mean.
Like I said, I went in being like, this is going to be one of those like dumb, probably some humorous parts. And that's what it was. But like, it entertained me enough.
Well, hey, you know, whatever works.
Yeah. Especially because I was in my 8-hour tattoo session on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. When you have something to watch during that, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
It's probably entertaining. Yeah.
Yeah. But not a whole lot otherwise. I'm trying to think what else. I finished the book The God Killers on audiobook, and that was really good, and it leaves you hanging for a sequel, and I don't know when that's going to come out. I don't think it's till early next year, so I'm a little sad about that.
I hate that when
I know. I read this manga. It's so much what it's called. Villains are destined to die, and this like girl gets sucked into this Sims game where it's like So there are these games in, like, real life. Like, I've played a few of them before where you're, like, this girl and there's usually, like, 5 guys that you can, like, depending on your interactions, like, you can romance them and shit. So this game comes out. She plays it on normal mode where you're the main character. But then on hard mode, you're the villainess of it. And so, like, it's even harder to win these guys' love because, like, they're against you to begin with. So she gets pulled into this game. And so it's just her trying to survive and make these guys not want to kill her. It's funny and adorable and cutesy. So I've read those, you know, but that's where I've been.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, making sure my kids don't have TV.
Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I've read some things, but no, it's been a hard couple of weeks. So I haven't done anything really. So I have nothing.
No, nothing. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get together this week though. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So we got that going on.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, other than that, I don't even know.
I don't either. I got to get back into the swing of editing and shit, you know, and I got to start researching. I think I found my case for next week, but I've got a show to watch. Well, by show, I mean, it's a 3 episode docuseries.
Oh, yeah.
And each episode looks like around an hour. So I'm going to have to start watching that stuff.
Soon. There you go.
But yeah.
I know. I even knew we had this long break, but I still waited until like a couple days prior.
Well, again, I mean, you found out pretty soon because it was that Tuesday before I left, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, when you get hit with that, depression's
just like,
real.
Yeah, it's for real. So. And I'm like, just was in the phase where I was like, don't talk to me. Don't look at me. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to do anything. I'm mad. I'm sad.
That's
so, yeah,
fair.
I waited and I even knew my case, but it's not like it was difficult to work on it, but it was funny because even last week, someone asked me like, oh, whose case is it this week? And I was like, no, we're still off. They're like, still? I'm like, it's only been like a couple weeks, but it does feel like forever. So I get it. And it was just all the things with, I mean, you know, and then just Halloween stuff in general, I feel like.
Right.
All the school activities you have and all the things. So now we're like well into holiday season where it's going to be busy, but we'll still be here for
a couple weeks at least.
Yeah.
I think
we're here through
like December 20th.
Yeah.
I think.
Will be our last one for the year. But yeah, so yeah. I mean, we still have a good 5 weeks left.
You got a few more episodes from us.
Yeah. So, we're not going anywhere. So,
yeah,
cool.
There we go. You guys know the drill, the usual. You can find our socials in the show notes, email us or message us, all the things.
Rate, review,
follow, subscribe, whatever to help us out. We greatly appreciate it. Share, you know, that's always helpful.
Yeah. Definitely. Oh, we never even talked about our news article that's on there.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Listen, yeah, I kind of forgot because that was a while ago, too. Yes. But yeah, I mean, maybe we'll reshare that again at some point when they share it, like, as an actual article on their page. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think they take articles from the issue and then they share those throughout the month. So when we do that, we might share it again. But if you haven't seen it, it's on our page.
Well, we're supposed to be getting the magazines.
Yeah. And, you know, I was wondering when that is because one of my neighbors that I don't even know that well sent me a text like a couple weeks ago, and it was a picture of the magazine of us in the magazine, and it said, oh look who it is. And I'm like, wow. I said, yeah, there it is. Yeah. And so every day I keep thinking it's going to be in the mail and it's not. And I've been meaning to text you about that too. And I keep forgetting.
I wondered because it's the November, December issue, right?
Maybe we could always reach out. But yeah, I don't know if it's different than the other article or not, but it was cool that they did an article on us. And it's always interesting to see how it turns out after all the stuff you share and do. Like, you just never know what's going to make the cut. And
yeah, exactly. So that's interesting.
It was cool. But yeah.
Well, now I'm like, I'm impatient for the magazine.
I know. We'll touch base after we are done recording this and see. Because I need to, maybe we can figure it out. But okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all.
You guys. Well, you know, stay heartland kind.
But darkland wary.